All right, folks, welcome back. Ninth win of the season. This is Yankees Unloaded. I'm Jake Ellenbogen, and he is Gary Sheffield Jr. And today we're going to be talking about Nestor Cortez's dominant performance, which, man, if he's pitching like that this year, if we're going to see more like that, they are in a good spot. They moved to 3-1 at home following a 7-0 beatdown of the Miami Marlins against their ace, Jesus Luzardo, who, you know, look, the first three innings, I thought, you know, this is going to be like one of those 1-0, 2-0 games. And then the fourth inning came, Gary, and Luzardo got absolutely walloped. I think that's pretty much the best way to put it.
We were just talking about him, too. We were talking about the fit of Luzardo in New York, and not saying we were like clamoring for the guy, but
yeah,
I mean, the stuff, I mean, you saw the stuff the first three innings, and just the fact that what really turned that game upside down was that at bat from Anthony Volpe. First of all, going down 0-2, and they were talking about it on the broadcast as well. As soon as that at bat got to 0-2, they were talking about his comfort. And in my opinion, where that comfort's coming from is just mechanics and just having an understanding that you're not trying to do damage 0-2, but you actually saw as soon as that slider popped out of his hand, his swing was down and through the zone and the finish was up above the zone. That's what you're looking for. So I think a lot of young hitters especially get it confused when the finish of the swing is up here and they think, oh, I need an uppercut to get to that position. But if you watch the replay slow on Volpe, you can see he's down through that ball. So it turned into a three-run jack when in actuality, he was just trying to put the ball in play. So I think that's part of the reason why that comfort's there. And again, part of the reason why we wanted the promotion in the lineup. But what's so great about this is that we started off this game slow again, and we're kind of making a habit of this where we don't score in the first three innings and we continue to grind at bats. And before you know it, we're putting up crooked numbers and winning games. But to advance this into Nestor Cortez, you talked about, I am a little worried about Nestor Cortez at the beginning of this game, but if he can creep through the beginning of the game, he's going to be fine. He got through the beginning of the game. As soon as he did that, and he did that without his best stuff, he really didn't have high velocity. He wasn't 93, 94. I believe it probably was cold out there, right? What was the temperature of this game?
You know, it was nice today in New York. So I would say it's probably around 50, 60 degrees. I mean,
okay,
you know,
so still not warm, but
yeah.
Yeah, not West Coast weather by any stretch, but he was honestly living
the 90, duality of man.
That's right. 90 to 91. Right. So he didn't have his greatest stuff, but you did see him working that cutter inside or off the plate. He got guys like Jake Berger, you know, Arias, where they were just essentially, oh, Tim Anderson looked atrocious today.
I think they all looked atrocious today. Berger struck out three times. I think the only one that really showed up for the Marlins was Brian De La Cruz.
That's right.
Who's very underrated. And I wanted to apologize because I didn't even say his name when we were talking about their lineup.
Wait a minute. He had their only two hits.
Oh, so and they were good at bats. He's hitting .292 on the year. Okay. Brian De La Cruz, I think he's their best hitter right now. I mean, Arias will probably end up being that at season's end. But I think if you're looking for a combination of power and contact, there you go. You know, speed as well.
Well,
you
shoot,
know, Brian De La Cruz.
Yeah, then, no, that's true. But I was talking about Jake Berger because he's leading their team in RBI. And the dude shows up today and goes over 3 with 3 Ks. I mean, do you want to talk about?
I mean,
you talk about shutting it down. You did that.
We were, you know, I had mentioned the concern because, you know, being that this is so lefty dominant of a lineup, that even though, you know, Nestor's going against them, they still have that short porch. And then the only short porch shot we saw was Soto. So, yep. You know, that was funny to see, but you know, let's take you guys through this game. You know, again, like Torres went 0 for 5. I didn't really feel like it was an 0 for 5 day for him. I thought he had some good at-bats. He hit a really hard liner to the left fielder. Soto was outstanding, going 2 for 3, typical walk. You know, his strikeout, whatever. And obviously the three-run jack. Judge, it wasn't a great day at the office for Judge. You know, I'm not saying it was horrible. 0 for 4 is not great, but he had some decent at bats. Stanton looked really good for a third straight game. 2 for 4, not just good in a sense like on the stat sheet, you know, 2-for-4 is good. Like, those were really good at bats. I'm actually
rocket out to left field.
Good Lord. Also another thing, when was he pulling fastballs last year? Because he wasn't. I mean, he
not
very
often.
Rarely did it.
No,
so that's huge. Rizzo had one of those dribblers right over the first baseman's glove, which you like. I mean, you'll take those any day. You know, Rizzo, you know, able to get that hit, score a run. Volpe's home run was big. His two strikeouts, I'm going to just call BS on them. Horrible, horrible, horrible calls.
Birdie had the same thing.
If this game was close, I'd be upset. We're not going to spend too much time on it, but they were absolutely terrible calls on him.
I think it was really just up and in was more the issue. I thought away, they did fine.
Yeah.
But that pitch to right-handed batters in this game, yeah, like you said, we're not going to spend a ton of time, but that pitch to righties up and in, they were calling that all day. It was
I don't know how. I mean, where you bat from the right side, right?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's I did as well, although I can randomly hit lefty. I never really did in a game, but...
they don't usually call that because it's not normally the intended target. So usually, like, when they say...
Well, if you're calling that, you've never been a right-handed batter before. That's what that tells me. That you've never hit on the right side. Because that is not a hittable pitch. And Michael Kay said it. Paul O'Neill said it. That's not a hittable pitch. And it's not just it was close. It wasn't close at all. You want me to hit something that's up here? I mean, like, it's literally right in my collarbone area. I'm not swinging at that.
This is true.
I think the second punch out that was called on Volpe, it felt like the umpire had something against Volpe the way he reacted the first time. And I don't think he did anything wrong the first time. But the second time, I think Volpe was like, no, screw you. Now I'm pissed. And you know what? I like to see that him getting fired up. Again, I don't want to talk too much about it, but I like that he's no more Mr. Nice Guy. You know, you could still be nice and everything.
Yeah. Last year, he was the rookie, and now he's like, I'm the shortstop of the Yankees.
Well, now so I'm leading the league in batting average.
That's
so,
right.
So, you know, I'm going to assume that I know more than you do. And I think he was right both times.
He was.
Which, you know, now you're getting into Soto territory. How about a 3-for-3 day from Doogie? Love seeing it.
I told you guys, don't worry about this guy. He's already been putting the ball in play. So what is there to worry about? What
with
it was
a walk,
that he was, with a walk. What he was good at, he was still doing it. Like,
yes.
He's not necessarily a bat to ball guy where he's going to be just scorching the ball like Giancarlo Stanton. He's not, okay, ladies and gentlemen, he's not going to be hitting balls 115. That's not Verdugo's game. But what you saw today, where he's slapping the ball to center field, he's going to slap a ball to left field, he's going to beat some shifts, right? He's going to make some quality outs. That's why we brought him on this team. So,
absolutely.
Yes, Alex Verdugo was hitting like a .140 coming into this game, but now he's hitting .211. Obviously, he's feeling like he contributed to something finally. And I know he hit that home run in Arizona, but it almost felt like it was like a consolation prize. Didn't feel like much for whatever reason.
He didn't look like it felt like much. Like, it was good in that moment, but you never saw him really explode off it. You know?
No, he needed this game just to get he wanted to get his feet wet. And now he's a Yankee, so he can breathe and he can return to form into that guy that we expect to hit .275, .280 this year.
No, absolutely. I thought, you know, Arias hit a missile to the left. You know, his typical, he'll just punch it out to the left field. And that doesn't get caught last year. Verdugo had a great jump on it, made a nice play. Once again, it's not just his bat, guys. It's also his glove. And that's a big reason why they went out and got him. And honestly, I think the Red Sox are really going to regret doing that.
He looked better in left field than I would have ever thought. So they told me that he was... Okay, so the gripe is that he's pretty mediocre in left field. I thought he's done a pretty good job battling the sun, battling wind.
I think he's been great.
Hitting the throws that he needs to be making.
He's been the best left fielder since Gardner right before Gardner had that fall off.
Yeah.
Like, that was the best left fielder the Yankees had had in that time.
Well, that's not saying much. We've had some pretty bad left fielders.
But Verdugo, I mean... Again, he's not Gardner. Like, Gardner in his prime is an all-star left fielder, right? But Verdugo's really good. And I hope he starts getting, you know, the respect he deserves. Also, I want to point something out. I don't know if you saw the comment of it, and the person's probably never going to watch this thing again because of it.
Oh, tell me.
But I got to mention it because I know there are going to be people that are probably like, this is ridiculous. So I mentioned he walked, right? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, some dingleberry in the comments section literally goes and says, I'm not watching you guys anymore because you said, like, I forget exactly how he worded it, but he's like, you think a walk elevates batting average. None of us said anything like that. So I feel like we had to defend ourselves here because we know what batting average is. We know that, you know, it goes up and goes down based on how you do at the dish. If you walk, you're not putting the ball in play or anything like that. You're not striking out. It doesn't help your batting average at all. That's not anything new. That's something I've known since I was in second grade. So,
I think that guy came from Twitter because people from Twitter tend to argue based on projections and not actually based on what you wrote or said.
There's no way that guy watched an hour long video and that's possible. The only thing he's, yeah. So
not possible.
Anyway, let's move on. I just wanted to throw that out there because that was like, what a goon. How about Trevino? He didn't get a hit, but he had two walks today, and I'll take it. If he's in there for Wells, I'll take two walks. He's still batting, you know, 71 at this point, 071. But I don't really care. If he's going to be in there and get two walks a game, like I'll sign up for that. He doesn't even need to hit. Just move it along. I thought Birdie kind of got screwed. You had alluded to that. At the bottom, first off, he shouldn't be hitting ninth, you know, behind Trevino. That's insane. Secondly,
I think they do that just from a speed aspect. I don't think Birdie ever hits ninth behind Trevino because they necessarily think that Trevino is just a better hitter. I don't think that at all.
Yeah, definitely not.
I think that they believe if Birdie gets on base, it sets the table for Torres to take a plate appearance with a guy who can steal a bag.
I kind of like that.
Like, don't get me wrong. I don't hate it. I really don't. And this happens a lot, especially in high school and college. They do this. They'll put a guy who can run in the nine spot, whereas maybe the seven and eight hitters maybe aren't as good of a hitter as that nine guy. So this happens. And you know, I've seen like D Gordon on the back half of his career. He was kind of slotting that nine spot as well. So, yeah, no, I don't think Trevino's an eight for any good reason. I think he's just kind of hidden there.
Yeah. And I mean, we talked about it. I thought Birdie had some good at bats.
He did.
And he got screwed on some bad calls.
He did get blown away by a fastball at some point in this game. Ball was in practically to the bat stop by the time he swung. So.
Yeah, that was bad. But looking at the lineup before we get into, like, you know, the little nuanced things that we like to get into, what would you take away? Because no Cabrera today. I don't like that he's, I mean, I guess he's kind of an everyday guy, but now this is what, the third game he hasn't played in.
That's right.
And he's your second best hitter, you know, statistically. I mean, he's even ahead of Soto based on the stats. So, you know, I don't know if I agree with that. I think that, you know, today, maybe, you know, if you wanted to put John Birdie in, you know, maybe you give Torres a day off or something like that. But I don't know. The way Cabrera's been hitting, swinging a hot bat lately, I'm trying to give him as many reps as possible. So I know, is this a fluke? You know, I really need to know, like, if I'm the Yankees, I need to know what we're working with. Are we going to have to make a trade? Are we going to have to do something with DJ LeMahieu? I mean, what's the deal here? Because soon LeMahieu is going to be back. And are you telling me that you're going to start LeMahieu over Cabrera the way he's playing right now? I don't think that would be really fair. I mean, I think it also probably doesn't help the lineup. That was my gripe. Not having Austin Wells is another gripe because I think he's really starting to... I showed you the graphic.
Which for people who haven't seen the graphic, it essentially says that the expected batting average of Austin Wells should be incredibly high, if not leading the league. So that's saying a lot. Now, of course, you still need to get hits. It's not all about expected batting average. Expected batting average is not real, right?
Yeah.
So having said that, you need to make sure that we are trying to put the best players on the field. And I will say this, my takeaway, because that's what you originally asked about this Yankees team. And I feel like this is not what I was expecting. I'll be honest with you. This is not where I anticipated this team to be, and not in terms of wins, losses, but where the impact's coming from. Yeah. I did not expect the New York Yankees to be 9-2 for the reasons that they're 9-2. The Yankees are 9-2 right now because Aaron Boone is making the decision that the starting pitchers need to pick up the slack. Yes, Gerrit Cole's out, but they're finding ways to see Nestor Cortes go eight innings today. You're seeing a lineup. Aaron Judge hasn't done a damn thing all year, and that's fine. He's going to be Aaron Judge at some point in this year. It could be literally 2 days from now, and Aaron Judge could just be back to regular old business. But this team doesn't go 9-2 in any stretch of their organization when Aaron Judge is hitting .175 with an ops of 700. It doesn't happen. So the fact that that's happening, I went on MLB Network last year and I talked about this Yankees team who was winning a ton of games.
I remember that.
Winning a ton, right? And Aaron Judge goes down with an injury and they said, hey guys, it seems like since he's been out, they're just terrible. And I said, like, well, you can't build a baseball team. Yeah, you can't build a baseball team where one player doesn't play well or he's no longer there because of injury, and suddenly you're losing games. No one player should be winning and losing games for your team. I know we say MVPs and all that stuff. No, you need a great team. There's no Shohei Ohtani, Mike Trout situation where you're going to go win a championship because one dude's great. No, we've got guys like Volpe hitting sixth that are hitting three-run jacks against dudes who are really good in this league.
And he's hitting .417 through the first 11 games of the year.
We have got a real lineup. All thing we wipe everything else away. Our lineup is actually formidable. We haven't seen a formidable lineup in a really long time. So that's my takeaway with this team. We'll see in the comment section what other people are noticing about this team, because I'm sure, Jake, like, we're nerds of the game. We're going to figure out some type of detail that we didn't expect. But I'll tell you, I did not expect guys in this lineup to make impacts without hitting, if that makes sense. To be able to make quality outs. We saw Birdie bunt today and get
that
guys.
That was up. Awesome.
When
that
have we
textbook.
Seen the Yankees do this? Right? So I'm happy about all of it.
No, I'm with you on that. That was huge. They left six on base today. They were 3-for-9 with runners in scoring position, which we'll take. I mean, that's not a bad day at all. You know, I think looking at this, you know, it's funny. I was like, are the Yankees the only team that has like a hitter like Volpe that they're just refusing to bat leadoff? And actually, look over to the Angels. Logan Ohapi is right up there mm-hmm. among the best in the league in batting average. He's batting seventh for them.
Seems to be working for the Angels.
I just I don't understand. Because, you know, this is the mental gymnastics that we were talking about off air, but in a different way. You're literally trying, like, instead of this was literally a 100-word assignment, you're giving me 500 words to tell me why you're doing something. At that point, I have to think that you're just making stuff up. Like, I have to assume that you don't even believe what you're saying. It's like when you have Volpe in the six hole, like, sorry, but he should be, I mean... He should definitely be leading off, no doubt about it. But at the very least, he should be in the top four because of the way he is hitting right now. Like, I wouldn't mind him batting cleanup right now. If you're not willing to move him up to the leadoff spot, bat him cleanup, you know, because that's somebody who's working counts. He's finding his pitch. He's walking, but he's also getting on base. And he's somebody who is more likely, and his, you know, his greatest stand is swinging the bat right now of the last three games. Who would you rather have in a key moment where you just need to get the bat on the ball? And to me, in the cleanup spot, people look at that differently, right? Some would look at it as I need the home run hitter. I look at it as like I just need the guy that is more often than not going to get on base, is going to slap it into left field or, you know, right field. And just go with it. You know, that's who I want there. It's why,
yeah, well,
I like
the way Stanton's hitting though, and the way he's playing, he would be, cause you have to remember, just because mm-hmm. Stanton's hitting doesn't mean, okay, now it just justifies him hitting fourth. We absolutely can just say when Stanton's at his best, we still probably have a hitter we'd rather up there, like be up there.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
Anthony Volpe. So what it means is that our lineup lengthens in a different way. And we've tried to explain this in the best way we know how, in that this is a promotion for Anthony Volpe. And we have to remind people again, this is a 21-year-old person. This is not a kid, okay? This is a grown man. This guy, he can go to the bar, he can get drunk, okay? he He's about 2 years away from renting a car. This is a grown man. This is not a young person. Okay. So like people are seeming as though we're talking about a 15 or 16 year old kid. No, that's a kid. The people you see running fake profiles on Twitter, those are kids. Okay. This is a 21 year old man. I promise you, Anthony Volpe's approached with two strikes and understanding that, hey guys, I'm not just trying to hit homers anymore. I'm trying to be an all around baseball player. That mentality is not going to go away by moving him to leadoff or two or wherever you want to move him in this lineup. Anthony Volpe has an understanding that I have to hit this way if I want to be effective. If he wants to hit the way he did last year, he can go hit ninth where Birdie's at.
Okay. Yeah.
So if he's going to continue these type of changes, how long do I have to watch this player? What, to the All-Star break and then we're going to move him? Like, at what point do we need to see
it? It makes sense. I mean, so today there's only one guy that had five at-bats, just like yesterday, Torres. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
If there's one guy in the lineup that I want having five at-bats right now, as much as I love Soto, and Soto is the best pure hitter in the lineup, mm-hmm. right now it's Volpe. I don't want Volpe having only four at-bats. Now, it says three, but, you know, he also walked. So that's my issue, is that we've already seen it. Okay, they win 7-0. It didn't matter today. It's going to matter at some point. And there's going to be a time where, you know, Torres, as much as we like him and all, gets up there and he strikes out and the game is over. And you just sit there and you're like, well, what could Volpe have done, you know, with the bases loaded there? You know what I mean?
Yeah, this isn't even a negative thing. This is more so of we're essentially having the discussion that you can't use Anthony Volpe's success right now in the short term as, how should I say this? You don't want to use this as him hitting sixth as the common denominator as to why he's playing well.
Oh, that's just ridiculous. Because I don't buy into any of that.
Players, when Anthony Volpe gets to the plate, I promise you guys, the team's like, oh, this is Volpe. He's leading the league in American League. Like they're leading the American League in hitting. They know who this guy is. I promise you, Anthony Volpe does not get up there and they say, oh, thank goodness, Volpe's up there. This is the sixth hitter. They don't look at that. Pitchers don't say, oh, this is the sixth hitter. Thank God I could take a break. It doesn't work that way. If Gleyber Torres slid to fifth and Stan moved to sixth and Volpe went up to one, I promise you they're still looking at Volpe the same way. The only difference is that when they see 3-1, 3-2, you know, 1-2 counts, they're worried about walking him. Why? Because you're talking about Juan Soto coming up next. You're talking about Aaron Judge. And then right now, Giancarlo Stanton coming up next. So that's the mentality of pitchers. Now, I'm no pitcher, so I'm not trying to speak from experience here, but I was a hitter and I knew no matter where I was in the lineup, based on how I was playing, was how I was going to be treated. Okay. So people knew who I was when I came up to the plate. That didn't change when I let off or I hit sixth or fifth. So I'm just trying to essentially help explain that this has every bit to do with Volpe and his growth, because when he's playing like this, and it's not going to continue at this pace. We understand that. We understand there's regression. And hopefully he gets up off the mat and continues this trend of better habits. Is that the Yankees can go to a place we haven't been since 2009. And the best way for us to go there is to put every single piece that we've got on the field in the best possible position right now. And I know by even saying that, I'm basically saying like it has to happen right this second for us to go there. And that's not necessarily true. Technically, they have to be in the right position when we need them in October. But all I'm saying is I don't want to put any game in the season in jeopardy because we were softening the blow of what a player can handle. So that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. One thing I think analysts do, fans do, is they contradict themselves. They talk about how these athletes are just world class and, you know, all the heckling and stuff. They don't even hear that. They're just, they're programmed not to, but then they're sitting there quaking their boots, hitting, you know, sixth instead of leadoff. Like, I'm sorry. I just don't think that. I don't buy that. I don't think if you think the athletes are superior in every way, like the mind, body, and soul, then why do you think Volpe, who's hitting sixth, if he were to go up to hitting leadoff, it would break the whole lineup? Because personally, I think that would make the lineup even better than it is right now.
And that's saying quite a bit.
That's saying a lot. So, yeah, I would really like to see them just get off and just do that. I understand, you know, I like Torres. We all like Torres, but I don't even think Torres has been that bad in the leadoff spot, but his numbers aren't leadoff worthy the way Volpe's are right now. Volpe should be leading off. With that said, before we dive into the next game to talk a little bit about it, you know, I was just really impressed with Nestor. 2 hits, 6 strikeouts, no walks. You know, I thought today was just so dominant by him. 102 pitch count. Like you mentioned, Boone, I think he deserves credit for letting him go 8. You know, you might not take too much of a look at that, but, you know, I think when he goes 8, now you can bring in a guy who they just called up. And guess what?
That.
Your bullpen is not used at all. So to me, this is exactly what you want going up against a bad Marlins team. Now, we said that this Marlins team who just dropped 10 on St. Louis, this could be a little bit of a tougher matchup than given credit for. They got some free swingers. You know, it's a lefty-dominated lineup. They're going to do well at Yankee Stadium. But if Nestor's pitching like this, you know, and the hitters say, like, this is not a good – they just have a bad series. You know what I look at? This game is huge for Carlos Rodon's confidence.
Oh, no question about it.
I think they have a chance here to, like, reestablish Carlos Rodon. If he goes 7 tomorrow – think about this. He goes 7 tomorrow and strikes out 8 and gives up 5 hits and does similar – to what we just saw Cortez do. Do you think Rodon is all of a sudden going to have these issues where he's getting into jams and stuff? I think this is one of those moments in the season. You'll always have a bad start. You can't pitch 34 times in the season, not have a bad start. But this is one of those points in the season where you can ride off the momentum here. And right now he's got a 2.79 ERA, a 1.76 whip. That needs to go way down. That's way too high. It's early though. 9 2/3 innings, 12 hits given up, 7 strikeouts, 5 walks, 2 homers. If he goes, like I said, 7 innings, doesn't give up a run or gives up 1 run and doesn't really walk anybody and get some strikeouts and miss bats, Rodon is going to feed off that for the next few series. And that's what I'm hoping for. Tomorrow, I think the Yankees are winning this, no doubt about it. I think AJ Puck is a horrible matchup for AJ Puck. I think the Yankees can really dominate him in this
Good
one.
Lord, you cooked.
Yeah.
You cooked that fool. Though, let's be serious here. Carlos Rodon, okay, he had his stuff last start. Okay, I loved what I saw on screen.
Yeah.
Okay, loved what I saw. Now, was he a bit wild? Yeah, he absolutely was. But here's the good thing. No one's going to care that we're playing the Marlins if he puts up big numbers. Just as we were all posting online that Juan Soto hit his first bomb in pinstripes, no one cared who he was playing. Hardly anyone who probably watched that was like, oh, it was against the Marlins. No one really cared. Yeah, it's baseball. You're playing a Major League Baseball team, and guess what? It is a difference. On the field, there's a huge difference. Carlos Rodon can go out there, and if he has the stuff that he had his last start, this is probably going to be a pretty successful start. I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So having, if we know that, Carlos Rodon has to know that. So coming into this game, I'm expecting him to be aggressive with his fastball. If the location on his fastball is better, if he's working inside in the zone, that fastball is not leaking out over the middle of the plate. If that alone is happening, I have no doubt at all. He's going 6 strong, probably striking out 9. That's my anticipation. So if that happens, I mean, we're talking about building the confidence of a player. And I do love, if you looked at our schedule at the beginning of the season, you'd have been like, man, like, this doesn't seem like a good setup for Carlos Rodon to get back on his feet. We're talking about Houston. We're talking about Arizona. And then all of a sudden, Carlos Rodon gets through those starts. Now we're talking about Miami, right? And he can possibly build off of those starts that have already happened. I'm thinking my prediction on Rodon might just work out. So we have to hope that he stays healthy in this league where players are dropping like flies. But as long as he can do that and then command that fastball, Miami is going to be in shambles tomorrow. So
oh, yeah.
I'm looking forward to every bit of it.
It's going to be another one of those games like today. I really believe that. AJ Puck's whip is almost at 3.
Is that bad?
9 walks in 2 starts.
I'll tell you one thing. He's not as bad as Kyle Freeland.
Well, okay.
Kyle Freeland could be throwing. And this is no.
What do you mean?
With all due respect. Yeah. I don't know.
The Rockies aren't trying to win. Okay, let's just be honest here. The Rockies are not trying to win baseball games. Like, you see what they're doing, and it's just honestly kind of pathetic, and the fans deserve better. What I'll say is this, okay? Puck having 9 walks in 2 games, and he's going against a team that loves to generate walks and loves to, you know, really push at bats. The only thing the Yankees can do wrong here is get him out of the game earlier. Like, that's my only concern, is that they're not going to, because I mean, you know, their bullpen, I think, is okay. You know, I think they could really put a beating down on AJ Puck. And I think after what Lizardo did today, how he just continued to carry that, you know, that load and giving up 7 runs, and they just kept him in there and they're like, oh, we don't care about your stats at all. We don't care about your confidence.
It could be a ticket for the team start.
I mean, I think it was, because I think tomorrow Puck, who they have no reason to believe is going to go out there and do well based on his last 2 starts. I mean, I think they'll be ready for the bullpen the 3rd, 4th inning.
Yeah, so, it's Major League Baseball. So like always, we'll tell you guys straight up.
Yeah, anything could happen.
We can lose this game tomorrow. No problem. They can beat us 4-1. But let me say this. Nothing that you can possibly imagine would make you make that prediction. Nothing.
No.
So that's just the only reason that we would ever lose tomorrow is because it's just baseball and you can't predict it. But like yesterday, where we told you guys, and Jake specifically told you guys, we are going to probably beat them down today. We did exactly that. We eventually got to Lizardo, made the game ugly. And so, yeah, there's no reason tomorrow couldn't just be another smackdown. As I saw, WWE had a major performance. I don't know if you saw that. It was like John Cena, everybody showing up. Who was the? It was John Cena and one other person who showed up. It was The Rock.
They all did, like, the CM Punk and
it was the
Randy Orton.
No, the Undertaker's appearance was the best.
Oh yeah,
ever.
Undertaker.
I don't even watch WWE, and that was sick.
I don't either, but I thought the Roman Reigns paying homage to your dad was pretty cool.
That was pretty cool.
And I'll take it a step further. Yes, Network deserves a lot of credit because they used your dad today. Finally, like, name that Yankee. We were just talking about, they always pick the most obscure dude. And no offense to, like, David DeLucci, but I didn't even know you played for the Yankees. So, like, he played like 1 year. I remember him on the Mets, you know what I mean? But like, so they would pick guys that would play 1 year, you know, 1 year on the Yankees, 1 year on whoever they're playing. And so when it came out, the graphic came out, I was like, oh my God, I finally know who that is. And I have to know who that is because you're my co-host. And I thought it was cool. They showed a little highlight package, your dad with, you know, a big cigar in his mouth, just hitting bomb. Yeah. It was cool.
Yeah, it is. It is cool because what is a little difficult about his career is that he really wasn't anywhere long, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And what a lot of people don't realize is he was supposed to be a Dodger for the rest of his career. Most people don't really hear that conversation, but he was the first person to approach them and be like, hey, I want to sign a 12-year contract. And they were like, no player should ever get a 10-year deal. So they let him go. And that's for Sean Green. That's right. So
I would rather have Gary Sheffield, but I'm just, you know,
Sean Green would rather have Gary Sheffield. Okay. So
the Dodgers fans are going to hear this and be like, damn,
you can't be upset about that. You know, you can get upset at my tweets all you want, but facts are facts. Okay. So, but as far as that, what do they call it? Name that Yank. It was cool to see that. Cause I mean, I couldn't tell you how many people sent that to me. But it was just really cool to see him getting involved in the broadcast. And I really want to see my dad join a Yes broadcast for one of those games.
That would be really cool. And I think what needs to be said is that, and we've already received like just these comments that are like, you know, so pro Gary, just your dad and you. But I think what kind of gets forgotten is, I don't think your dad was treated poorly necessarily, but I thought they could have kept him around a little bit longer. I wish we got him earlier, but he's so like loved by Yankee fans. Like, that's the thing I think people just don't realize is that, yeah, okay, he might not have a specific place he was like at, you know, he doesn't have like a 10-year stop with a team, but the Yankees fans love Gary Sheffield.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I told you the other day, you had an 11 jersey that you were going to wear at the Diamondbacks game. And
I really lucked out, by the way. This Yankees jersey in the background, I know it's flipped to the front, but that's an 11 Gary Sheffield jersey and then slash Dwight Gooden. But what's funny about it is it just so happened to be a de facto Anthony Volpe jersey. Now that he's going to be as good as
you said that, and I didn't even think of Anthony Volpe.
I got lucky.
I think of Gary Sheffield.
No, I completely agree. But remember, I told you, I said if Anthony Volpe goes out and hits 325 for his career and he's in Monument Park, unfortunately, and my dad will even tell you, after a 20-year career in pinstripes, people don't think about another great player who wore your number. They think of you, and he'll have earned that if he gets to that point. So I'm rooting for him to do it, as much as I don't want my dad to be forgotten as a Yankee wearing number 11.
He won't
be
forgotten.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the point of the Hall of Fame, is to make sure that conversation continues about, you know, talking about different players. So, you know, we'll see how that goes.
I mean, with his batting stance.
But he's in WWE. So I mean, I think he'll be okay.
Yeah, I mean, you had Roman Reigns there. Like, that was great. That was awesome. I saw that. I was like, oh, that's really cool. Yeah, I just wanted to mention that. I mean, I think you've seen it, you know, like up close and personal. But Yankee fans love your dad. And I think that's really cool because, I mean, he was only there for 3 years, but doesn't matter, you know.
Well, it goes to show Yankees fans just know their history. Yeah. And what's crazy about it is that it's not just my dad. Yankees fans know, you know, I was literally just having a conversation to you about one of the baseballs that I cherish to this day. And I don't actually know currently where it's at. I can find it somewhere in my house, but it's Corey Lytle. And most Yankee fans, when they hear that name, they know who that is. See, there's a lot of D-backs fans. You'll say some names from 2006, 2005, and they really don't know who that is. And they are of age to know who that is. Okay, so this fan base is different. Part of the reason why we started this podcast, and you have to remember, we didn't just want to start some other random Yankees podcast. We wanted a podcast where we dive into the details. And we didn't think there were a ton of Yankees podcasts doing exactly what we wanted to do. So that's why we're here, because we feel like Yankees fans are pretty much the only fan base on earth that wants this, that actually wants to hear, hey, this guy has an expected batting average and he's supposed to be hitting eighth, and we're talking about wanting him to play. What organization in baseball knows who's the eighth hitter and is having podcasts about who's hitting eighth? Nobody. You know what I mean? So like, it's pretty much Yankees, Mets, maybe Red Sox occasionally, right? So there's a reason we're here. And I think that the fact that you're saying like how much they love my dad and all that stuff, part of that's a reflection of how good the fans are in itself. And it's the reason that we're making this podcast. So yeah, shout out to you guys.
Yeah. I mean, I think we got a great fan base. And man, you see that one dude who was trying to call out the roll call?
What?
Yeah. This guy was like, oh, the roll call's so stupid. It's a bunch of grown men getting, you know, players to look at them for 2 seconds and then go back to their... I'm like, dude, let's just talk about this for a sec. Baseball is a game that has multiple pauses, like multiple upon multiple. If you play baseball, then you know. Like, it's a slower game. There's no issue. How is there any issue? I think it's great. I think...
Well, let's just ask the players. Well, first of all, we're 9-2. What is this, a Yankees fan that's saying this?
No, I think it was like an Orioles fan.
Oh, okay. What's their record?
They have like 6 wins, I think. 5 wins.
Okay, because I'm not even trying to troll or anything, but whatever we're doing is clearly... There's working. No common denominator to draw here about what we're doing. Okay, we're winning 9 games out of the 11 we played, and we're playing Miami tomorrow. Who are you playing?
Yeah, I mean, well, Soto came over, and, you know, he did it. Then, you know, he's apparently new to the whole thing, and he loved it. And then... You know, Verdugo was doing this whole thing, almost like wasn't ready for the pitch because he was all into it.
My real opinion is love that. My real opinion is this, Jake. Let's ask the players. If the players say, let's do away with it, do away with it.
Players never, because players like it.
There you go.
And shout out to the Yankee fans for cheering for IKF. That made his day, made his series. He ended up talking about that. he thought it was a cool ending to his chapter. So that also made me really sad when he said that, because I was like, but I want you back. Like, I liked IKF a lot. I just thought, you know, you need a hit, IKF would come through. You need a walk, IKF would come through. You need a stolen base, IKF would come through.
How old is he?
Like 28, I think.
Don't write him off for a return.
Oh, and, I'm not.
Because at this point, the one thing that there is about Yankees, it's kind of like playing for the Knicks, is that, and it's the same with the Lakers. There's a few organizations out there in multitude of sports where once you've proven that you can kind of, you can play under their lights, that organization tends, if they really need someone's services, they tend to look your way first. So yes, is IKF the answer at shortstop when we need a shortstop? No, he's not. He's not that. He's not a stopgap shortstop. He is a super utility player.
He was a gold glove third baseman that they put that short, which I will never understand.
Yes, and we said that we would like to see IKF back. Obviously, when our payroll ballooned up to over $300 million, it made it more difficult for them to make that decision. They ultimately went a different direction. Fine. But yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to a reunion with IKF. We're talking years down the road when we need him. And obviously, like, DJ LeMahieu would be out the door as our utility man currently. So yeah, I shout out to IKF. He was better than what people remember, just because he was put in a position that he had no business being in the first place. In my opinion, the role you see Oswaldo Cabrera in today was the role that IKF should have been in. So that's all I'm saying.
I agree. Definitely agree. And I think, you know, just to wrap this show up, Yankees are 9-2, 3-1 at home. You know, they've won, you know, 6 of their 7 on the road. After this Miami Marlins matchup at the stadium, they will be going to Cleveland, I believe, which, I mean, you have a chance to, because we were talking about this earlier today, we were texting about this, Cleveland could be an option to trade with at the deadline. And you have said, you've stood tall, you've stayed grounded on this. You really want Emmanuel Clase to be a Yankee. I mean, we were talking about Lizardo today, and you and I are kind of out on Lizardo, and I understand it seems a little bit premature. Some people would say that because it's just one game, but the reality is the Yankees don't really need a starter that badly. And I think that's what we're learning, is that they really don't, because when Cole comes back, which they're not going to be without Cole that much longer. You know, it's not like initially there was a lot of concern, but when Cole comes back, you're going to have an issue. Like, you're going to have too many starters. You're going to have Schmidt. You're going to have Heald. They're going to have to make a decision there. You also have mentioned Clayton Beter as an option, who, by the way, pitched three pitches in that game against the Astros. We have not seen since. He's now pitching, you know, he's starting again in AAA. So that makes me wonder if, you know, maybe they're saving him until these arms get really tired, or maybe there's just flat out saving him, saying, you know what, we just want him to be a starter.
Yeah, because I like Heal in the Heal in the bullpen. I mean, the fact that Heal's throwing 100, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think Heal's stuff's going to look like when he knows he's only going to throw what, 15 out the chamber, 30 pitches max? You're talking about his stuff is going to amplify most of the time. When you watch a guy like Michael King's a perfect example of this. We use Michael King, and he was in the rotation for a short time. So when we were using him, his stuff wasn't quite as good. But when we put him in the bullpen, that 94, 95 suddenly turned into 97, 98, didn't it? Right? So there's part of that is usage. And if you're talking about Gerrit Cole's return, and that's supposed to happen in the next like month and a half or so, you're talking about something has to go down between Clark Schmidt and Luis Heal. There's a decision. Not everybody can sit around. Maybe you can make the argument that we can slow play, go six-man rotation. Who knows what they want to do?
Well, I mean, I think if you were going to do any six-man rotation, this would be the time to do it.
Right.
Because you're going to bring in Cole very slowly, I would hope. I would assume. And if you're going to bring in Cole slowly, that's not really a start, right? I mean, really, when you think about it, you're talking about 3 innings, maybe.
It's a Gerrit Cole opener.
Yeah, so, I mean, at that point, you're six... man rotation would pretty much just be the 5-man rotation, but you're giving Gerrit Cole you know, three innings to get himself going, and however long that takes, so be it. I think Clark Schmidt offers way more for the bullpen.
Okay.
And I think Heel offers way more for the rotation, because I think eventually they're going to get Heel to manage that pitch count better over the course of this year. And I bet you by the end of the year, Gary, you know, if he's comfortable, and as long as he stays healthy and it's looking okay, and they haven't really babied him with the pitch count, if you've noticed.
They haven't.
You know, I think later on the year, like maybe in September, he's going to get way more. He's going to have way more command of his pitching, and he's going to be way more efficient with his pitch count. And I think they'll be able to stretch him into the seventh inning around that time.
I hope you're right. I mean, it's a different way than maybe I would do it, but yeah. I wouldn't doubt at all that the Yankees feel like this guy's stuff can be honed in. And
I mean, he could be what Severino was supposed to be. That's mm-hmm. what I kind of look like Heel could be. And I don't feel like I'm being too, you know, dramatic or thinking over the top with that. I think when you look at the stuff he has right now, the only issue he has is he only has three pitches. That's the only issue that I can really think of. And really, that's what's putting him in position to have those big pitch counts early on in games, is because he only has three pitches to go with. And now teams can really telegraph that. But once he gets that fourth pitch, and maybe he adds it later on the year, whatever, I think he's really going to be hard to beat. And again, this is a guy who's 25 years old, so they're not in any hurry necessarily to throw him in the fire, make him the ace of the team. Cole's going to be the ace for the next 3 to 5 years, you know? So, I mean, at that point, to know that you have that flexibility, Heel next year will probably be their number two, if I'm being honest.
Okay. Well, I mean, hopefully Rodon's still the number two.
Well, hopefully Rodon's the number two.
Hopefully.
That means good things.
And you did say that he needed four pitches. How many pitches does Rodon have? Doesn't he really have three polished pitches?
He has three, but it feels like he only has two.
Well, so okay. So he's got a changeup, I believe. So he's got the changeup. Yeah. He's obviously got his four seam. He's working on the cutter, and he's got the slider. So I would say he's got three pitches that he trusts, mm-hmm. and I'd say two he's trusts, and then one he's working on. And the cutter looked pretty good his last start, so I'm going to give him that. But yeah, I wouldn't say Luis Heel necessarily has to polish four pitches. But yeah, to be what you said he could be, that two or that potential ace down the road at age 29, 30.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to need four polished pitches to be that ace. That's just comes with the territory. So yeah, there's going to be different opinions on what to do with Luis Heel when Gerrit Cole comes back. And we're talking about when Gerrit Cole comes back and he's fully healthy, because you're not going to have a fully healthy Gerrit Cole in a 6-man rotation. The Yankees want to get every bit out of that money they spent, and rightfully so. So I think the Yankees have some answers coming on the way when it comes to the mound. Right now, my focus is just on the plate, because we're starting to swing the bat. Verdugo swinging the bat. I thought Rizzo, his at-bats looked decent today, a little bit better. There's a lot to be happy about right now for Yankees fans, other than 9-2. So not good to be a fan of the AL East unless you're us.
No, not good at all. And, you know, I'll say this, when it comes to the next two games, Tuesday, Wednesday, they have the off day. Thursday, any of your Friday, Saturday, Sunday matchup against the Guardians. I look at the next two games. I think this is a sweep, because I think they're going to go in tomorrow and they're going to bash the crap out of Puck. And I think Rodon is going to feed off of his last two starts. And then this is just going to add on to that. So I think you and I both kind of have a good day for Rodon. But then they have Stroman on Wednesday. And I think Stroman right now is their best pitcher. And that's saying a lot if you're getting 8-inning Cortez and you're getting Rodon.
Stroman's going to be rowdy at the stadium.
Yeah,
I mean, game three, come on.
He was way too good to not get the win. And I'm sure he knows that. But he's been all about the team. Hasn't really made anything about him. So I think him versus Weathers, I mean, that's the other thing. They got Lizardo in this matchup. They're going up against Ryan Weathers and AJ Puck. They're not going up against Braxton Garrett. They're not going up against Edward Cabrera. Those are two guys, by the way, I could see the Yankees being interested in at the deadline, as well as Lizardo. I still think they could be interested. We might not be, but I could see that.
Game two is probably an easier matchup than game three, in my opinion. Just looking at that from the outside looking in. But as far as momentum goes, like I said before, Marcus Stroman's been off to a perfect start. He's throwing strikes. The game goes by quick when he's out there.
Yeah.
He's not overexerting himself. He's efficient, right? He's essentially been perfect. So all I got to say.
Yeah. I mean, just wrapping this thing up, I just think, you know, they're going to tomorrow, they end up winning their fourth straight series, which is great. Then they got the Guardians, you know, three in a row, Friday, Saturday, Sunday in Cleveland. They go to Toronto. So they're staying somewhat close by, not going to the West Coast or anything like that. Travel won't be too hard. Going to Toronto Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So no break in between that. They have a travel day off. They go back to the stadium against Tampa 19th, 20th, and 21st. Then they have a four-game gifted series against the A's. You have to understand something here. When we were looking at this schedule, I think you and I talked about it before the season started. We're like, wow, whoever's the schedule maker did not like the Yankees. I mean, you think about it, the hype Toronto gets, right? Arizona and Houston. And plus, Miami wasn't supposed to be this bad. So that's a pretty decent start. And you probably would have signed up for, let's just say, you know, you give them the next two games and they're 11-2. So the first 13 games, they're 11-2. That's mm-hmm. great. But you probably would have signed up for 7-6 with what we've seen, you know, with like the four game set in Houston to open up the season.
Oh, yeah.
The reigning NL champion Arizona Diamondbacks. I would have said 7-6 without Cole is a success through the first 13 games. Potential to be 11-2 going to Cleveland, going to Toronto, and then you got Tampa and then Oakland. Like, to me, that Oakland series, I think you could just give them pretty much all wins for the most part. Like,
yeah, and then look at the rest of the AL East. The team that is starting off hot in the AL East next to us is the team we probably wanted to be good. The Boston Red Sox. Who has the Boston Red Sox maintaining what they're doing, right?
I know, they're not blowing them until June.
Yeah, and so they're not going to play until June, but Boston's not blowing our socks off. They're just not. So to be quite honest with you, I'm not worried about Boston whatsoever. Okay, the team to be worried about is Baltimore and Tampa. Okay, Tampa, for whatever reason, just gets more out of less. We always give them the respect. I'm going to do it again here. Baltimore, they've got the roster. They made the offseason acquisition when you're talking about Burns, which was fantastic for them. They needed it. And then you're talking about Holiday, who's going to be called up at some point this year. He will contribute this year. Okay. But having said that, if you wanted to look at the standings and say, what's the pitch, like picture perfect start to the season? This is it. Of course, we need to stay healthy. It's a long season. But when you're talking about what we needed to happen, this is exactly what we needed to happen because, like I said this the last episode, the last thing we need is to start out the way Baltimore is right now, the way Tampa is right now. You're talking about 5-5, 5-4, or a 4-6. And then we get down to the All-Star break. And now suddenly we're putting the decision in Brian Cashman's hands saying, do we go for it and sell prospects? Or do we punt and say, let's run it back next year with another year advanced of Gerrit Cole, another year advanced of Giancarlo Stanton, another year advanced of DJ LeMahieu, right? So we don't want those decisions on our plate. We wanted to make sure that these games were won, and somehow, some way, we are grinding this out, and we look really good doing it. So the fact that that's happening, I'm just going to take it and ride this wave, because ever since, again, and I cannot say this enough, ever since we started this podcast, the Yankees have been Yankeeing. I got to say that.
The Yankees have been Yankeeing. That's, yeah, that's a thing.
They look like the Yankees right now.
Man, I mean, I think they're going to pound puck into the ground. And then, you know, I think they beat Weathers with Stroman. So I think they're going to be 11-2 in the first 13. And I mean, anybody would sign up for that. And I understand the hesitation to move them to number one in the power rankings, but they're the best team in baseball right now. And I have no issue saying that. Will that change? Potentially. But right now, I mean, the sample size, the first 11 games, I think they look better than the Dodgers. I think the Dodgers have more star power, and like you've said before, they might do it more in a more fun way.
No doubt. Oh, bombs. They're way more fun. The Dodgers are the most fun team. They're built like a like when you were 13 years old and you went on your franchise mode and you just bring all the fun players over and you just blow the payroll away. That's the Dodgers. So
you just turn off the payroll.
You turn off payroll and you just run the team. You make the hot dogs more expensive, right? You run it the Howl way. So, but yeah, we're the best team in baseball right now. And frankly, there are a few sleeping bats in our lineup. So
that's the thing. Exactly. So that's going to do it. Appreciate you guys hanging out with us. As always, I'm Jake Ellenbogen. He is Gary Sheffield Jr. You can follow me at JK Bogey. You can follow Gary at Gary Sheffield Jr. You could also follow the show at Yankees Unloaded on all social media. We're doing the Louisville Slugger bat again, which is hilarious. But I think that's going to wrap it. So we'll see you guys tomorrow after the Yankees likely knock puck out of the park.
And like this video.